Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. A King of Semi-Scripted Television returns Sunday night, this time focused on a fast, furious subject. NASCAR, The Rise of American Speed, is CMT's long-awaited miniseries about how auto racing became a national pastime. Executive producer Stephen David, along with executive producer Tim Kelly, joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Artbound, the popular arts anthology from independent public TV outlet KCET in Los Angeles, enters its fourth season Tuesday night with national simulcasting over Link TV. One new wrinkle is a first. A host, Los Angeles Times writer and blogger Carolina Miranda, who comes to us later this hour. Also ahead, heads up, Caroline followers, we have breaking news for you and the answer to this week's classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later this half hour. 51 degrees at the top of this hour in New York, and welcome again to the program All About Television. We're wrapping things up on a Friday, wrapping up the first week of year number 8 here on Blog Talk Radio. Happy to have you all aboard wherever you may be. Got some wonderful guests for you in the next hour, and it gets better when you are involved. So begin the conversation. Give us a call. If you have a question or comment for any of our guests, here's the number you use to get your voice going. It's 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you are catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. And we have a chat room at blogtalkradio.com just for you. It's Simon Apple 04 by name, so use the phone or the room. Either way, we do hear you. And, of course, while the program is on the air, you can connect to us by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk screen. Follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. One breaking news note before we get to our guest. CBS has renewed Criminal Minds for season number 12 this fall. It was a little bit touch and go, despite the fact that Criminal Minds is still one of the top-rated shows on television, certainly on Wednesday nights. But there's a little sticking thing called the license fee that CBS had to deal with the production company ABC Studios. But now this has all been rectified, so Criminal Minds is certain to be back this fall. What is still not clear is whether the sequel or spinoff, that's Criminal Minds Beyond Borders starring Gary Sinise, which started earlier this year, will that be back for a second season this fall? We will find out in about a week and a half when CBS has its upfront or fall season preview at Carnegie Hall here in New York. And that is news notes for today. One of our favorite guests is back with us today from New York. He is the founder of a company that bears his name, a company that has won some wonderful awards and great popularity for its development of what they call semi-scripted television. It's a mix of documentary footage, reenactments, some scripted stuff, and interviews with key newsmakers and consultants on a particular subject. In this case, it's the subject of the rise of NASCAR and national auto racing. In a new 3-part miniseries called NASCAR, The Rise of American Speed, it premieres this Sunday night on CMT. Joining me here in New York, executive producers Stephen David and Tim Kelly. Stephen, Kim, great to have you both back.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us again.
Stephen, how did you get involved in doing a series about NASCAR?
Well, I started looking into it, and it's actually an amazing story. And I think the thing that was most amazing, if you don't know about NASCAR, is that it really centers around a family. So we found this family drama within it. It was really started by a guy named Bill France trying to make a dream come true. You know, this is born out of bootlegging, and so he's trying to make a dream come true. And it's really the story of a guy and his family just trying to make something happen, who basically almost went broke many times. He had everything to lose and, you know, makes it happen.
Mm-hmm. Tim, based on what Stephen just said, I'm reminded of that wonderful film Thunder Road with Robert Mitchum, who plays the bootlegger who tries to keep things going. You see a lot of his fast-driving autos. How did bootlegging, or how did the idea of bootlegging and fast cars turn into a sport?
So basically, you know, they would soup up their cars in order to get away from the moonshiners and the bootleggers would soup up their cars to get away from the cops so they could outrun the cops. And so what they would, after a while, they had these fast cars, and on the weekends they would start having races down south throughout the South, like small races, and they found that people started coming to the races. And what happened is Bill France, who had a dream of racing his whole life, he was reached out to by one of his old friends who was in Georgia and basically was asked to come up. He said, look, I know you're trying to get into racing. You've got to come check out these races. We're getting lots of people here now. And eventually he saw that it was possible, that people really liked watching these races. And it's sort of he used that and built it from there.
Stephen, how long did it take?
One of the moonshiners were paying cash, so they would make the moonshiners' cars faster than the cop cars. The mechanic.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take for this project to go from idea in both of your heads to get on CMT?
It probably has taken about a year and a half for this to happen, and we worked in partnership with NASCAR in this project because they have they basically have footage since the very beginning. So in the genre that we're doing, which is this hybrid mix, we used a lot of their footage, and we worked hand in hand with them, you know, with their library of footage, which is just huge.
And Tim, this was carte blanche, you know, use whatever you want.
Yeah, I mean, basically, we also worked hand in hand with NASCAR historians that work at the company, and they know this footage, you know, in and out. And basically, they even came into the edit. We sat with them and really found all the best footage. They have a great library of just amazing footage throughout the years, and yeah, we had full access to that, and we really got to show some amazing stuff.
Stephen, on a project like this, because you use so many different techniques, the reenactment or scripted scenes, the documentary footage, as well as the interviews with people who are living who can talk about the history of something like NASCAR, how long does it take to figure out how much reenactment you'll do, how much documentary footage you'll use, how much interviews you'll do? I mean, is it a very fast process or a very slow, you know, look at the whole big picture and figure out here's how it all comes together?
I mean, I've done doc and reality and scripted and this genre. And this genre is definitely the hardest because you want to put together a mix of genres, probably a reason that genres generally live in their own genre. And so when we're putting this together, you know, the first step is, it's a lot of research, and we're trying to always go, trying to find a character. We're trying to find the heart in this documentary around a character. So, and that way it's like scripted. So when we're looking at all the research, which is a massive amount, we end up looking for a spine and you really using the research around that character's drama. And then when we do the script is actually written in all the genres. So in the script, you see the dramatic scene, the voiceover, the interview bites we'd like to get. And then we film towards the script like a scripted show. And then when we get into the edit, everything gets thrown up in the air again. And the edit is a very hard process, which is why these take, a year to a year and a half to do. So a lot of different techniques have to be used just to make it.
We're talking with the two key executive producers of NASCAR, The Rise of American Speed. It's a three-part miniseries that begins this Sunday night, 9:10 Pacific time on CMT. Executive producers Stephen David, Tim Kelly, they're with us here in New York this half hour, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum, also with you from the Big Apple. Delighted you are with us this pre-Mother's Day Friday, 2016, here on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment for Stephen or Tim, get it rung in at 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we will talk to a popular person in the world of adult film writing and directing. She is making her regular TV debut in a new series on Showtime next Thursday night called Submission. That's right, Submission. And yes, it's about 50 Shades of Grey Tale. Writer-director Jackie St. James, she will join me live and exclusive right here Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, on Tomorrow We Televise. And it's a fascinating situation. We'll also ask her whether, given we are seeing many independent filmmakers get into television series, whether independent adult filmmakers also want to make the same move. Jackie St. James from Submission, right here, Monday, on Tomorrow We Televise. Tim, how many people were you able to find for interviews who know a good chunk of the history of NASCAR?
So, we were able to find a lot of people. We have two types of interviews in the show. We have a group of historians that really know all the history and all the details. So they can give us all the facts and the real details in these stories. And then we interviewed, Dale Earnhardt Jr., who's also an executive producer on the show, Richard Petty, Jeff Gordon, Kevin Harvick. We interviewed a lot of racers from past and present. And those guys know a lot more than we even thought they would know about the history. And they can also relate to what it feels like to drive, and they can give a lot of insight. So you sort of have two different sorts of interviews that make the show really relatable to sort of the average viewer.
Mm-hmm. Steven, aside from the fact that we learned that the origin of NASCAR and the origin of stock car auto racing came out of what some people thought was a criminal practice at the time, what are some other surprising developments that people are going to learn about for the first time?
Well, I think, all the way through, because we're going through from the beginning to today, and I think the whole way through, the way it actually became popular, I feel like one of the best stories of it was in 1979, which was their first televised race. The whole story behind that, there was a storm, and then the track was wet, and then they had to come up with a way to dry the track. And then, it ended up being, because it was a snowstorm, people were watching TV. So it ended up being this huge audience, and I thought they had this great victory. And I don't know if you remember this, but right after the race was over, which was one of the best finishes they've ever had, it was Bobby Allison and Carol Yarbrough got in a fist fight on the track, and all the cameras went to them. And they were hitting each other with their helmets, which actually, in a preface to today's world of reality, ended up probably making it even bigger than it ever would have been, because that fight was just replayed over and over again on shows.
Tim, you get into the comparisons between NASCAR and IndyCar racing, and also when things shifted, where, for many years, the Indianapolis 500 was the big auto race that everyone looked forward to, as opposed to the Daytona 500, and now it's the flip. Daytona 500 gets the higher ratings, and NASCAR and IndyCar racing, which is what people now call the Indianapolis 500 type of sport, is sort of not been what it used to be.
Yeah, I think a lot of that has to do with what a lot of the show is about, which is the character of the drivers. They have such loyal followings, and they're such characters, they're such interesting people that are driving these cars, from anyone from Richard Petty to Dale Earnhardt. And there's also a lot of families in it. It's a very family-oriented sport. You have Richard Petty and Lee Petty, Dale Earnhardt Jr. There's a lot of families that all are part of this sport, and I think that the fans really got attached to the personalities of the sport. And I think it's, the same way they do with football players or quarterback, they really become very attached to these drivers. And I think that might have been a big part of the shift.
We're welcome to get 841 into our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. So if you have a question or comment, put it in the chat room or use our phone. That's 646-652-2906. And that number is good anywhere you catch us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. Steven, what kind of assistance did TNT give in terms of ideas for the program or some directions to go?
They actually is a very good fit for them and for their audience. And so they definitely knew, they gave direction on which way to go. You know, it fit within our genre of it being character oriented, but they do have a lot of families watching shows together on that channel. So we tried to stick to what would be their sweet spot, which worked for us because that's where the story was anyway. But as Tim said, there are a lot of families within NASCAR, and it goes from generation to generation. So we feel or hope that that will work within the core.
Tim, whether you talk to the Earnhardts or you talk to the Petties or people like Jeff Gordon, the families that are involved with NASCAR, is there something, some quality that unites them?
Well, I think that, you know, these a lot of these characters are all larger than life. I mean, Richard Petty and Lee Petty, Richard Petty was just, they dominated the sport for a long time. And I think it's just sort of a, I don't know how other people get into NASCAR, but I feel like when you grow up in a racing family and you're growing up on the track as a kid, it just sort of is the natural progression for them to go into racing and follow in their father's footsteps. And when you have someone like a Dale Earnhardt, and there's just such this big person to live up to, and that they, you know, they have this already built-in audience from their father, and this built-in, you know, it's, I think it's just a probably a passion for the sport growing up with it. It just seems like just natural for them to get into it.
Mm-hmm. We've got Stephen David and Tim Kelly. They are the executive producers of CMT's new miniseries, NASCAR, The Rise of American Speed. Starts this Sunday night at 9 p.m. Pacific time. The following chapters come the following two Sundays. And again, that's on CMT, available on cable and satellite all over the place. Stephen and Tim, join us live from New York this half hour, right here on Swabby Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. Happy you are aboard on this Friday afternoon. If you have a question or comment for our guest, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, Simon Apple 04, my name, welcome guest 858, as well as guest 841 into the room. Coming up on our program a week from today, we will have two people involved in a popular PBS series called Genealogy Roadshow. Think of Antique Roadshow, except this time, the subject is how you grew up and who you might have grown up with and your times that you grew up with. We'll have the executive producer, Carlos Ortiz, and one of the genealogist experts on the program, Kenyetta Berry. That is going to be on the first half of the hour. On the second half of the hour, we are bringing back the executive producer of a very popular weekend series called Hiring America. We've been tracking this show for several years. It's usually carried Saturday or Sunday mornings on TV stations all over the country, and it's now in its fifth season with more than 190 stations aboard. Executive producer Bill Joyce will rejoin us. That's a week from today, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Stephen, this summer is a big one for you and Tim and your company, because I believe you have two semi-scripted projects, at least, coming on AMC. And one of them is one that originally, several years ago, was announced for Discovery Channel, called, at that time, The West. Now it's The American West. And somebody named Robert Redford is involved with you.
Yeah, he's an executive producer with me on the project, and it's a really interesting story. We are telling the history from the end of the Civil War, 1890, and it's basically how the West was settled. But what I find so interesting about this is it's all the names you know. They all were intertwined and dealing with each other in a 15 to 20 year period, and that's Wyatt Earp, Billy the Kid, Jesse James, Crazy Horse, Custer, Sitting Bull, Grant, and you see how inadvertently all of these people ended up making the country what it is today. It's a fascinating true tale of how this whole thing happened. And I think, you know, in the past I've seen all these people sort of movies about them separately, but I think what's so interesting is that how intertwined and cause and effect each one of them had on each other and on our country. A lot of action.
What's it been like? Yeah, what's it been like to work with Robert Redford?
He probably is the most knowledgeable person I've ever met about the West. I remember the first time Tim and I sat with him, he's like an encyclopedia of the West. He knows everything. He probably knew more than any historian we interviewed.
Tim, do we know when AMC is going to run this? Originally, we were told June 11th, and I understand that that may be changed.
I don't think, as far as I know, that's when it was airing.
Okay.
If you hear anything different, you
should let
call us.
I certainly will, but that's not the only AMC in store. Last year, you both came up with one of the real sleeper success stories on that channel last summer, The Making of the Mob in New York. That is coming back for a second season, and this time the action shifts to Chicago. And, of course, that for those who remember the series Crime Story back in the late 1980s, that's where that series started, and it was a fascinating one of the best, I think, crime dramas or period dramas that NBC ever had.
Tim, you want to take that one?
Yeah, sure. I mean, so this one, you know, the first series we featured New York and Lucky Luciano and Meyer Lansky. And this season we're, you know, focusing on Al Capone, Chicago, the formation of the outfit, and that was sort of his crime syndicate. And, you know, it's Al Capone, his rise, his fall, and then the Giancana and the guys that came up after him. And just sort of the story of it's a, you know, a different side of a different way that the mob came up as opposed to the one in New York. It's interesting to see how they were separate, but they grew in similar ways, but also very different ways. It's a really, obviously Al Capone is a polarizing character. He's one of the probably the most notorious gangster ever.
You know, Tim, it's interesting when we think of organized crime, many people think of New York. But it's really been Chicago that has been the focus of Life of the Mob on television. You go back to The Untouchables, The Lawless Years, I mentioned Crime Story in the 80s, and then, of course, we have now all the Vic Wolf shows, Chicago Med, Chicago PD, et cetera, some of which deal with organized crime in that city.
Well, I think one of the things is a lot of the crime that was done in New York, a lot of the things that were being done by the mafia were all being done a little more quietly than they were. Chicago was a little wilder, and things were done out in the open. You know, in New York, they only did things within the mafia, so violence was only done. But that Capone was so brazen that he was doing things, you know, out in the open in the middle of the street. Obviously, the St. Valentine's Day Massacre is one, but they were pulling out hits, you know, in the middle of the streets, and it was in broad daylight. And so I think it was just maybe a bit of a wilder place than New York in that sense.
Stephen, we always wrap up with this, but what else is coming from your company, and any purely scripted shows that you're putting together?
We, you know, we do have other ones that we're working on and coming out. We always have to wait for the network to announce them. Yeah, there are definitely more of these coming out. I think these three that are sort of coming out in May, June, and July over the next 3 months, they're all big stories. I think you know, luckily the first mob season did really well. I think the second one is, you know, there's always a worry, is this going to be the same thing, and it's just a completely different story. But just as interesting, if not more.
And it's also very interesting to both of you how the subjects you tackle evolve, like NASCAR starting from moonshining into one of the great national, now worldwide sports around the West, of course, how that evolved with some of the legendary heroes and villains of the time, and, of course, as we just discussed, the organized crime and how it went, whether it's New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, or other cities in between. It just always seems to be so fun that to always find a subject, and you seem to do it more often than not, where if there's a link with all these three shows, it's always how the situation evolves, how this particular subject came to evolve through the ages or through the decades.
Yeah, I mean, since we're never on these projects, we're never tied to one piece of source material. We're never using one book. We're just using all the source material and all the historians and a lot of experts. What we're always trying to do is find a new thesis that's an overall different way of seeing the story. So, I mean, I don't know how much – I feel like I learned a lot about the West, and you learn a lot about it in school, but never in this way. So we do like to look at it as sort of a, oh, is that why we are the way – is that why this happened? You know, we love to connect the surprising facts of a whole thing to create one big picture to their character, like a big puzzle.
The big picture and the big puzzle behind the rise of motor racing, NASCAR, the rise of American speed. It starts to unfold this Sunday night, 9 p.m. Pacific time on CNT, with two more chapters coming the following two Sundays at the same hour. Check your local news for where CNT is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, you can go to www.cnt.com. That's www.cnt.com. Coming up in June and July, two projects on AMC, first the American West in June, and then the Making the Mob, second season Chicago, that's in July. Stephen, David, Tim, Kelly, thank you both very much for coming on the air. Again, it's always a pleasure to have both of you on. Let's have you back on next month when American West premieres. Maybe we can get Mr. Redford to join you for that ride.
Great. Thank you. Always a pleasure to be on.
Thanks so
you
much.
You got it, Stephen, Tim. Absolutely. Take care. Have a wonderful weekend. Stephen, David, Tim Kelly joining me here in New York this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Our classic trivia question and answer are coming your way after we pause for some thoughts from the fine folks at Audible.com. One of the highly anticipated dramas coming up this fall is Neil Gaiman's American God. That's coming up on Starz. And if you're a Neil Gaiman fan, or even if you're not, well, you can hear what Mr. Gaiman has in mind with his wonderful imagination through Audible.com. His wonderful fiction Neverwhere is one of the newest titles at Audible, and it features wonderful voices like Sophia Kendall and Benedict Cumberbatch. And you can get it as a freebie when you subscribe to a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/televised. You know, audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and yes, inspiration. Over 180,000 titles to choose from, and the better thing is you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now through Blog Talk Radio. So once again, you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook like Neverwhere from Neil Gaiman or others, and you get a one-month trial of service. By the way, if you are a classic radio fan and classic TV fan of shows like Dragnet, well, you can get both the radio and TV stuff through audible.com. For example, with Dragnet, if you're a fan of the King of Police Dramas with Mr. Jack Webb himself playing Joe Friday, you can get the original radio version, many of its episodes, with many of the scripts that later became TV scripts at audible.com. So give it a try. Remember, you get one free book, 30-day free trial, and with Amazon leading the way with Audible, great customer service. That's audibletrial.com/televised. Check it out and be part of the more than millions of people who are learning that when it comes to wonderful audio entertainment information, nobody beats audible.com and Amazon Company. Now it's time for the answer to this week's Clappy Trivia question. Sorry, nobody got the answer. So nobody gets Nobody Died in Hollywood, the wonderful first novel by acclaimed TV writer-producer John Wilder. Here's the question we popped on Monday. Name either co-star of the 1960s CBS series The Nurses. The answer, Cheryl Conway and Zena Bethune, who won a Best Supporting Actress Emmy nomination for her role on the series. Incidentally, Bethune is maybe better known as a dancer and choreographer. At one point, she was a principal dancer with the New York City Ballet, and she may be one of the first ballet dancers, or maybe the first ballet dancer, to ever star or co-star in a primetime dramatic series. And as I said, she won an Emmy nomination for Best Supporting Actress in that role. You can see some of the episodes of The Nurses with both Conway and Bethune at YouTube.com. So that's our answer. Cheryl Conway and Zena Bethune, the co-stars of The Nurses on CBS, ran three seasons and also became a soap opera for a while as well. We will have a new classic trivia question on Monday's episode. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please include your name and your mailing address. You can also use Twitter to get the answer in, hashtag TWBT specifically. And that Twitter option is made available by the wonderful people at Hopscotch. The folks invite you to create your own social soundtrack anytime, 24/7. Check out what they're doing at hopscotch.com. Remember, you got to be in to win it, so be in it starting on Monday. If you miss the show Monday, we'll post the question Tuesday morning on my Facebook page and my own Twitter hashtag at UBB Simon TWBT. When we come back, we will have the new host of the popular PBS, or should say KCET, and late TV series, Artbound, Carolina Miranda. She joins me live from LALA after we pause the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com. It's your home for the best internet radio on the planet, with more than 25 million listeners around the world every month. And growing. It's your home for one of the most popular podcasts around. Movie Geeks United was on earlier today. So if you love the movies, you will love Movie Geeks United. Check it out every week, various times, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, Best of VTR is available 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised for this pre-Mother's Day Friday 2016. Simon Applebaum here with you along for the ride from Nueva York, 51 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for our next guest on the other coast, that's Los Angeles, give us a ring. 646-652-2906 is the number ahead. That's 646-652-2906. You can also use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 and 8. We will have 841, 872, and 874 is now joined in. So either way, for our chat room, we appreciate what you have to say because what you say matters. It's been about 4 or 5 years since KCET, at one point one of the most popular stations in the PBS family, broke loose from public television's big organization, and went on its own. It's been a bumpy ride here and there, but it is now starting to find its footing, especially since it also took under its wing the popular non-commercial network on satellite, Link TV. And now both KCET and Link TV are simulcasting one of their most popular series, Artbound. It's been on for 3 years in both places, locally and nationally, and this Tuesday it begins year number 4, but with a wrinkle, a new host. Normally in public television, when it comes to documentary anthologies, you either have no host, in the case of, let's say, Nova, or in the case of a show like Frontline, you had a host to start with, the late Jessica Savage, and then later Judy Woodruff, and then you went to no host. This time, we have a series that started with no host, and now it does. And the host we're talking about is joining us right now from Los Angeles. Los Angeles Times writer and blogger, Carolina Miranda. Carolina, it's great to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, how did you get involved in becoming Artbound's first host?
You know, that's a good question. They seem to have a lot of faith in me, even though this is my first hosting gig. I had written for the website in the past when I was still a freelance writer before I joined the LA Times. I'm also an LA Times journalist. And they had approached me, you know, they have this renewed focus on more documentary style programming, especially art programming. And the VP over there, Juan Devis, approached me and said, you know, is this something you might be interested in doing? And I was like, of course, you know, I like art and I like KCET and I like Artbound, so it seems like a good marriage. And then the next thing I know, I'm out around LA like shooting all of these intros.
It's an interesting series and assignment you've got because Artbound is catering to two audiences, the local Los Angeles, Southern California audience through KCET and the national audience through Link TV. So how does that deal? How do you deal with the subject matter and how do the producers deal with the subject matter and what topics to take?
Well, I think, you know, the topics are always local topics. They're looking at regional Southern California art stories. But I would say that those art stories very much have national interest at the moment, largely because L.A. is having this moment as where it's being written about a lot as an arts capital. A new museum has opened up here, new galleries. There are galleries from New York coming to open spaces in L.A. There are galleries from Europe opening spaces in L.A. It's like it's really this moment in which the city's culture scene is really blossoming. I mean, I feel like there's a story in the New York Times every other week about something that's happening culturally in Los Angeles. So I think what happens here is of national interest because I think L.A. is getting to that point of where New York is, where, you know, it's like what happens in New York is of interest because it's an arts capital.
Mm-hmm. What do you like about Artbound? What's the the attraction for you, aside from the fact that in your work with the Los Angeles Times, your blog about culture in the area, that you deal quite a bit with some of the topics like art, architecture, music, and so forth?
I mean, I think what interests me about what they do is that it's funny. Every time I'm researching something, one of the first places I go to is Artbound because I know they've probably done a story on it. So they're one of the few places in Southern California that do, like, a really thorough look at culture in the area. So I think there's that. And I think when it comes to their, you know, and that's their website, which has a lot of written and video, multimedia kind of stuff. But when it comes to the TV stuff, I think what's really interesting is this sort of in-depth documentary format, that what you're getting is it's not the quick take, it's not the 500-word article, it's not the BuzzFeed style list with like a lot of cute gifs. I think it's meaty, and there's people that are hungry for that. So you're not just going to be getting like a quick look at Charles Lummis, who founded LA's first museum back in the early 20th century. It's going to be a probing one-hour documentary. And I think, you know, in this day of the internet where everything is so fast and, you know, stories last for 15 seconds, I think that's important, and I think that was really the appeal for me is the depth that they go to and also the topics they cover. You know, this season has everything from a historical look back at LA's first museum founder, but also a look at some very contemporary things that some of the areas like museums and opera composers are doing. So it's like past and present.
Well, I welcome Rick Webb, our good friend from Philadelphia, into our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. So, Rick, along with everybody else in the room, you have a question or comment, post it in the chat room, or use our phone number, 646-652-2906. Good anywhere you are catching us across the country or the globe right here on Blog Talk Radio. The first episode on Tuesday night deals with, and it's interesting because we were just speaking about the American West. That's the subject of Stephen David's upcoming series for AMC. But in this case, it's about by the way, like yourself, a writer and editor of the LA Times, my name is Charles Lummis, and it's about how he got involved with one of the first museums in the city of Los Angeles, the Museum of the Southwest Museum of the American Indian.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this one. LA, the way people write about LA is that it's almost you think culture just landed in LA yesterday, and I think the story that this documentary tells is that culture has been manifesting itself in Los Angeles as long as there have been people in Los Angeles. And Lummis is a really kind of colorful, interesting figure with which to tell that story. You know, he was a collector. He was a preservationist. He was a journalist. He was a writer. He was kind of this colorful, contradictory figure. And, you know, he was very interested in Indian rights issues, but at the same time was very paternalistic towards Indians. Like, he was this kind of figure that embodies all of the contradictions that kind of helped settle, the conflicting interests that helped settle the American West. And he's such a vital part of Los Angeles history, and I think he's not a name that everybody knows about, and I think that's part of the intent of this one-hour doc on his life, is that this was someone who was not only key to the development of Los Angeles, you know, part of what he wrote, like, brought people to Los Angeles, but he was also key in establishing its very first museum. And at a moment when we're talking about, you know, what a hot art zone L.A. is, like, what could be more important than looking back at the guy who set up the first one?
Incidentally, for those of you who are listening to us in Los Angeles or up and down California, you have an opportunity tomorrow to actually meet Mr. Lummis and see the place that he founded, the Southwest Museum in Los Angeles. That's coming up tomorrow from 3 to 5 p.m. And some of the people that were spoken to that are featured in this opening episode of Artbound will also be there. And we will let you know how you can find out more about being at that event tomorrow. Again, from 3 to 5 p.m. that Pacific time over at the Southwest Museum of the American Indian. So at the end of our interview, we will tell you, if you're interested, how you can either email for tickets or call up to be part of that. We are speaking with Carolina Miranda. She is the Los Angeles Times writer and blogger who is now the host of the arts anthology, Artbound, going into its fourth season Tuesday night, 9:10 Eastern Pacific Time on both KCET in Los Angeles and Link TV, which is available on satellite of both DirecTV and Dish. Carolina joins us live from LA this half hour on Suave Televive. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York, 51 degrees at the top of the hour. You have a question or comment for our guest, give us a ring. 646-652 is the number to call. That's 646-652-2906. Numbers good anyway. You're catching across the country, around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. And we've got the chat room going full blast. I'm Apple04 by name. 841, guest of that number. And Rick Webber, friend from Philadelphia, already in the room. Once again, Monday on the program, we will have adult filmmaker, that's writer and director Jackie St. James, will join us live in an interview exclusive. She is breaking into television with a new series on Showtime called Submission. Think of it as an extended 50 Shades of Grey. We'll find out from her about why she made this show for Showtime and also whether she will use it as a way to break through mainstream TV making and whether other adult filmmakers also may join her. Jackie St. James from Submission, that's Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Incidentally, coming up on episode 2, a very interesting situation regarding a sergeant of the United States Marine Corps named Christian Ellis, who was in Iraq, and it deals with how art helped him get through the aftermath of that war. Fascinating subject.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a fascinating episode of Art Bound. Christian Ellis was a Marine who served during the Iraq War, and he was one of the few survivors of the Battle of Fallujah. I don't know if you remember that, but it was like a number of Americans were killed. Very few people walked away from that battle, and he was one of them, and with a broken back, no less. And, you know, like a lot of vets dealing with the war, there was a lot of trauma. You know, these years of attempting to put his life back together in the wake of that experience. And what's really fascinating is that he connected with some opera composers who thought his story was very interesting. I mean, here you have this man that survived a battle that very few people survived. I mean, it's almost like an operatic story. And he ended up collaborating with them on an opera about his experiences in Fallujah. So, you know, he didn't compose the music or write the libretto, but he collaborated with the writer and the composer to create this opera that played in very successfully in Long Beach. It was pretty much sold out, called Fallujah. And it was, you know, it's been written about all over the place in the New York Times as well, and a number of New York publications around the country, because first of all, it's a work of art that deals with this very contemporary happening, which is the Iraq War. And I think it deals with veterans' issues in a really, really interesting way. You know, how often does a veteran of a notorious battle help compose an opera?
People who don't know you, Carolina, should know that this is not your first experience with Media Beyond newspapers or blogging. You did some work with public radio at WNYC here in New York, and also with one of NPR
yes.
stations in Los Angeles. But this is your first time before the camera. What did you have to learn to be comfortable and be you in front of the tube?
Oh, my God, yeah. I've been on TV before prior to this, but this was my first time hosting. So this was my first time in which I had to learn lines and do walk and talk and you know, makeup and wardrobe and all of this stuff. It was a completely new experience because us writer types usually sit at home and nobody really cares what we look like. So, you know, it's just a lot of practice. And thankfully, Juan Devis over at KCET had me over to his house one evening, and we literally sat down and worked on the script, and we went through it together, and he worked on everything from pronunciation to intonation to, you know, finding ways to make it my own, that, you know, I shouldn't feel like I was being owned by the script, but that I should own the script. And so, you know, they were really great and very patient, and I just spent a lot of time one weekend memorizing all my lines so that I wouldn't embarrass myself once I got to the camera.
Did you tape the scripts of all the episodes for the season at once, or are you doing this like on an every week basis? So for, let's say, you come in before the first episode goes on the air and so on.
Yeah, I did it. I shot because I'm not in all of the episodes. I'm really just introducing. So we shot all of the intros and outros and the teases all over the course of 2 days on location around Los Angeles. So it was really great because I feel like you're also, it's not just going to be like a boring shot in a studio. It's like we are in the places where some of this art is kind of burbling up, if you will. Like, we're in the LA River, we're out in the hills, we're at the Museum of Contemporary Art. Like, we are out in the city.
When you do that kind of outdoor shooting, do you get easily frazzled by, let's say, sounds that come out of nowhere or people coming in front of the camera at the inopportune time when you think, like, oh, I've got this stand-up, what we call that. For those who don't know the vernacular, that's when you do a piece in front of the camera where you're introducing or finishing up a segment where somebody, like, jumps out of the camera, like, hi, Mom.
Yeah. No, I mean, basically, most of the places we were shooting, thankfully, we did not have people intruding. Like, they were isolated enough. But in Los Angeles, you cannot get around the reality of helicopters, especially if you're shooting near downtown. So it was like, okay, wait, hold on, got to let the choppers go by, or occasionally a car with a very loud stereo or a garage car horn. But overall, I mean, I think probably the most challenging one was we shot a scene in the L.A. River. The L.A. River usually has almost no water or just a trickle of water, and it turns out that in the week before we did the shooting, it rained, and so there was actually quite a bit of water. And because the river is just essentially this concrete arroyo, you know, they paved it over. It's been in many movies, you know, the paved-over L.A. River. It's super slippery when it has water in it, so it's like we're trying to do these scenes in which we're, like, walking around and catching footage of the river and all this stuff, and it was just, and we're in ankle deep, you know, water, and it's kind of slippery out there. So that was new for me, definitely.
Kelly, you ever see the movie Them? The movie with James Whitmore, and they deal with these giant ants.
No.
And they find the ants at the LA River Basin.
No. No, that sounds exactly like the kind of movie I'd watch too. I love sci-fi.
I was wondering because when you were talking about, you know, taping a segment or filming a segment at the LA River, that was the first thing that came to mind was Them, because they did a lot of filming around that basin where you could see the water.
Sure. I mean, the LA River has been in Them, but also movies like Chinatown and, you know, like James Dean flicks. It's been, you know where it was? I saw it the other day. It was in Purple Rain, the LA River. There's a scene where they're doubling L.A. for Minnesota, and you see Prince driving over one of the bridges over the L.A. River. So the L.A. River is definitely a star when it comes to cinema.
And let's not forget Volcano with Tommy Lee Jones, which just, it seemed like all over the place every few months. And, of course, the L.A. River comes to save the day.
Yes, exactly. Or even, you know where it is, too, is in the – that famous Beastie Boys video, Sabotage, the LA River has a prominent role in that.
Todd Blumis, Reimagining the American West, that is the opening episode of Season 4 of Outbound with new host Carolina Miranda. It is carried live on KCET in Los Angeles and nationally on Link TV, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. And we've got Carolina with us live from L.A. this half hour on Tomorrow We Tell Live for a few more minutes. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment, get it in now, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04, and then get 841 still in the room. A week from today on the program, we will have the dynamic duo who are responsible for a PBS series that's really become very popular called Genealogy Roadshow. Think Antiques Roadshow, except this time the subject is your genes, or I should say your ancient history, your family's ancient history, and how very unique it can be. We'll have executive producer Carlos Ortiz and one of the genealogists featured on the program regularly, Kenyetta Berry. And then the executive producer of the popular weekend syndicated series Hiding America, our good friend Bill Deutsch. The series is now in season 5, and it's reaching more stations than ever, over 190. Bill Deutsch live with us. That's next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televised. And coming up a week from Monday on the program, we'll introduce you to the head of a new production company that the fans are getting involved with. And they want to do television in a big way. The company's called Legion M. It was announced at Silicon Valley Comic Con a few months ago. And we've got the co-founder and CEO with us in an exclusive interview, Paul Scanlon. That's coming up on Monday, May 16th, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, exclusively here on Tomorrow We'll Be Televised. If we have a season 5 of Artbound, Carolina, do you want to not only host but maybe do interviews for some of the segments?
I hope so. I mean, I would hope that I could be – I came on a little bit after the fact this time. The lineup had already been decided by the time that I joined as host. But I think the collaboration went really well. I think we worked together really well. And I feel like, more importantly, I think we both have, KCET Artbound and myself both have similar views of what art in Los Angeles is, that it's not new, it's very rich, it's complex, and there are a lot of stories out there to be told, and we'd like to tell them. And so I feel like, you know, when you have two creators that are on the same page about what a program's mission should be, then it makes collaboration very easy. So I'm definitely hoping to do it again.
Kelly, before I let you go, I want to ask you about another upcoming episode that may be the most unique of the bunch.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Hopscotch, an Opera for the 21st Century. And everyone listening, picture this.
Yes.
This is an opera that premiered in November of last year, and it takes place throughout Los Angeles. And try this on. The audiences are in cars on the freeway, and that's how they get involved with the opera. Explain this. You have to, like, see this to believe this.
Oh, yeah. This is part of the kind of amazing stuff that's going on in Los Angeles. There's a producer, a director named Duval Sharon. Opera's in unusual locations before. He had done an opera called Invisible Cities that took place at Union Station in downtown L.A., and for this opera, for Hopscotch, he decided to take it to a whole other level. Like, rather than do an opera in one location, he wanted to do it at many locations. And in L.A., like, what is more L.A. than the car? So what if you did an opera in a car? So he had this opera that took place in a fleet of 24 moving vehicles. And so you get into one of the vehicles. You might have some of the characters in your car, and they keep singing to you. Then they might drive to a park, and there would be other characters there waiting for them. Some action would take place. There'd be more singing. Then you'd get back in, and you'd go to another location. And then different cars had different routes. So on different weekends, you could see different portions of the opera. And so it was this really dynamic way of taking a very traditional piece of culture, you know, opera. Like, what could be more traditional than opera? And just updating it for 21st century Los Angeles. And so he was like, we're just going to put it in a car because that's how people live here. And so it was this really interesting, experimental way of looking at art and also at the city. You know, rather than denying what L.A. is about, rather than trying to make L.A. something it's not, he was just like, all right, people here spend a lot of time in cars. What can I do that speaks to that reality?
I have two questions that I'm going to leave unanswered for now before we leave everyone today. And one is, what if virtual reality or augmented reality technology was used if this is performed again? And secondly, how does this work in New York, given the taxi situation or the Uber situation? Really curious. But we're going to leave those questions
to
the story.
Awesome.
So what do you
think,
Carolina?
It's better to do a subway opera. I think in New York it would be better off to do a subway opera.
Hey, that works for me. I'm 2 blocks from the F train and not far from G, so
there you go.
That might work. Let's see what the MTA does. Like I said, we will leave that question unanswered for another day. Artbound, season number 4. It premieres this Tuesday night. Absolutely. Season 4 premieres Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, both on KCET Los Angeles and nationally on Link TV, which is owned by KCET. And that is carried on DirecTV and Dish on satellite. And I believe some cable operators around the country are also taking it as well. Check your locals for what link is available in your area, what the channel number is. And for more details about the program online, here's where you go. www.kcet.org. That's www.kcet.org. And www.linktv.org. That's www.linktv.org. Now, for those of you in the Los Angeles area, if you want to see Charlie Plum as the subject of the opening episode, along with some of the people that are interviewed in that, you can go to a special event tomorrow from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. local time. And if you want to have more information about the event, maybe tickets as well, here's where you go. It's an email, specialevents@kcet.org. That's special events, all one word, at kcet.org. You can also call this number, 747-201-5888. That's 747-201-5888. It should be something very special. And again, Artbound will premiere Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Pacific Time on KCET and Link TV. Kelly and Miranda, new host of Our Panel. Congratulations. Thank you again for joining us. Have a great premiere. Have a great time with the event tomorrow and a wonderful premiere on Tuesday night. And we'd love to have you back.
I will. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You join. All the very best with you and everybody at the Los Angeles Times. Take care. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Kelly and Miranda joining us live from Los Angeles. Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, adult filmmaker, writer-director Jackie St. James, the writer-filmmaker of the new Showtime series Submission. That's Submission, and it premieres next Thursday, 11 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Jackie St. James on Monday, coming up on Friday, Carlos Ortiz and Kenyatta Berry from GLG Roadshow on PBS, and Bill Joyce, the executive producer of the weekly syndicated series Hiring America. If you came in on the program late, you want to catch up with this or other episodes that you may have missed, go to our homepage, www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast. It's available 24/7 at iTunes.com. And remember, you can also catch it on the iTunes podcast app, where you can hear us and see us on your Apple TV 2.0 remote. You can get Apple TV from your local Apple store or online. You can also check me on BK Live Monday. That's on Monday here in the New York area on BRIC TV between noon and 1. We'll have previews of the new AMC series Preacher and Feed the Beast. And we will hope to have the producers of those shows on upcoming Tomorrow Be Televised episodes before the end of the month. That's BRIC TV's BK Live, locally in the New York area. That's on Verizon Fios throughout New York City, all the cable systems in Brooklyn, Time Warner, RCN, and Cablevision Systems. And then the show is posted along with the segment late Monday, early Tuesday at youtube.com/BRICTV. We love to hear from you, so email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please include your name and where you're from, and don't forget you use that email to get involved with our classic trivia question of the week. Incidentally, we hope to be offering a brand new prize on Monday's episode. So remember, check out the question, be involved, participate. You never know. You just might win if you're first with the correct answer. You can also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. That's at UBCSimonTWBT. And remember, how you communicate with us, it doesn't matter because we want you to. And why? Because what you say matters, and that's the important deal. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associates are Amy Domestico and Candace Williams. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager. The creator and chief executive of this very enterprise is Mr. Alan Levy. Tomorrow Be Televised is brought to you today by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information, and an Amazon company. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful and great Mother's Day weekend. Happy Mother's Day, Mom. We're back Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Of course you know where, Blog Talk Radio. So be with us. And while you're at it, be safe and be great. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.